This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor super fan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive on 96.5thefan.com and also the Odyssey app. We are going to do the 5 o'clock hour, certainly a lot different than we usually would. Gonzaga is all over the Georgia Bulldogs. They are up 58-36. BYU is also all over VCU, 70-55. There is not a close and competitive game that is currently happening in the NCAA tournament. For the most part, today has been very chalky, except the 12-seed McNeese State, they beat Clemson. They were all over Clemson early in this game. They were up 31-13 heading into half. Clemson got this game down to 2 with less than 40 seconds to go. McNeese State holds on and wins the game. They advance to the round of 32. So this is what we're going to do. We are going to take 4 separate stops in this 5 o'clock segment for the 4 teams that are playing later today. Missouri plays Drake. Kansas plays Arkansas. You got the 6-11 matchup. You also got the 7-10 matchup in the exact same region. One game tips off at 6:10, so in about an hour or so. The other game tips off in about an hour and 25 minutes or so. I know I'm rushing home to watch it. Rob is doing the same. I imagine many of you are in the same boat that we are, excited for the start of the NCAA tournament. So, Rob, do the read. We'll start with Arkansas. We'll go to Kansas, and then we'll finish with Missouri and Drake.
Your workday is over.
Oh, yeah.
You're headed home, and now you're stuck in traffic. Time to get caught up on the biggest stories in Kansas City and around the country with CDOT and Rob. It's time for The Hits. Number one.
Carrying the hits are brought to you by Baker University, where graduates earn higher salaries and land jobs faster than any other university in Kansas. Apply today at bakeru.edu.
I want to start with this before I play our Arkansas bit. John Calipari and the way that he is recruiting is diminishing. There was a time there where Kentucky, for a stretch, they were knocking it out of the park with first round picks. I mean, this is a team that, I mean, they had John Wall go in the first round, DeMarcus Cousins go in the first round. They've had Anthony Davis go in the first round, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, Devin Booker. I mean, I'm talking about guys that went on to have very, very productive NBA careers. Anthony Davis is going into the Hall of Fame. Since COVID, these are the first round picks for John Calipari. Reed Sheppard and Rob Dillingham, who were two good college players, but Rob Dillingham can't get off the bench in the NBA, and Reed Sheppard is currently in the G League. Cason Wallace, who has developed into actually a pretty good player, but is sort of a role player in the NBA. Certainly not a star player. You are not winning a championship with Cason Wallace as your best player in college. Shaedon Sharpe, who plays for the Portland Trailblazers. If you've never heard of him, that's perfectly fine. Ty Washington, Isaiah Jackson. Tyrese Maxey was a first-round pick. Emmanuel Quickley is also one. Quickley's a good player in the league. Maxey's one of the better young guards in the league, but I don't think is maybe taking that next step to being a superstar. Why I'm telling you that is Calipari's model was built off of recruiting superstars. When he went to the national championship in Memphis, he did so with Derrick Rose, who was the youngest player in NBA history to ever win MVP. When he won his championship at Kentucky, he had Anthony Davis on his team, a player who was one of the 75 greatest players in league history and is a first ballot Hall of Fame type. He ain't getting those kind of kids anymore. I'm not sure if those kind of kids even go to play college basketball, but the old John Calipari, he would have got Cooper Flagg. He doesn't get that kid. There's fewer of those kids that play college basketball, and they're simply not going there. There's a couple times that he thought he had that guy. DJ Wagner was the number one overall recruit. He was supposed to be a one and done. He's in year two at Arkansas, and he's not even their best player. He's a four-year college player. Part of the decline of Arkansas and John Calipari is his model of taking the best freshmen in the country and putting them all on one team. Yeah, he's still getting good freshmen. He is not getting transcendent freshmen anymore, and his program is suffering for it. It failed at the end at Kentucky, and this year they're the 12 seed in Arkansas. So earlier today, we went to Arkansas to be joined by Jackson Collier. He covers them for Rivals, and we asked him, one of their star freshmen, Boogie Fland, who is probably going to be a lottery pick in next year's NBA draft, he is back for Arkansas. We asked him what that means for the Razorbacks.
So I think at the very least it's an extra body because they've been playing with seven players for 3-4 weeks now with the loss of Adu Thiro. So they get an extra body, which means, you know, hopefully foul trouble won't be as big of an issue. Legs and fatigue hopefully won't be as big of an issue. But also they're getting probably the most talented player on the roster back. He, by all means, was the most talented player on the roster. He's a three-level scorer, a really talented ball handler, can get downhill, can drive, can create driving lanes, can facilitate for other players, is a pretty, I would say, plus defender as well. So, you know, and he's technically, I mean, Cal has said he's 100%. He hasn't been practicing a ton, so I don't know how much rust there will be. They've already said that he'll be in a reduced role, probably 10 to 15 minutes off the bench, more likely than not. But I think at the very least it can't hurt. And even if he's like a spot-up shooter and an extra body, he's a 37% three-point shooter, at least before his injury. So I think it helps. You also got to worry about, you know, like you said, just dropping him into the situation, dropping him into an NCAA tournament after being off for so long. How will he adjust? How will he feel? How much rust will there be? Will that throw other guys off? Since, you know, we talked about how all these players really didn't know their roles early on, and that contributed to the lack of success early in the season. Boogie Fland was present for that. So will inserting him back revert the team back to that, or have they kind of fixed all that? A lot of questions.
Right now, we're talking to Jackson Collier. He covers Arkansas for their Rivals page, taking a closer look at the Razorbacks as they get ready for the 7-10 matchup coming up later today against the Kansas Jayhawks. How are fans taking to John Calipari in year one? There was certainly a lot of hype and buzz. I saw that Tyson Chicken helped put up a lot of money to bring him there. NIL, they certainly brought in a lot of exciting players. Year one cannot be going how fans expected it to go for the Razorbacks.
No, you know, I think fans, for the most part, were somewhat realistic with their expectations. I don't think any fan was expecting John Calipari to walk in the door year one and go compete for a national championship. I do think they expected better to start SEC play than 0-5 for sure. But I think the way that they ended the conference season, they went 8-5 down the stretch and were playing really, really strong basketball and really good basketball. I think that, you know, gained a lot of faith back in fans. Some fans had written the team off as early as mid-January. A lot of fans were growing hostile, not necessarily at Cal, but just at the program in general and just, you know, how fans can be. They're like, I'm not going to show up to the games because they're not playing very well. And then now I'm going to complain about everything on social media because they're losing. And, you know, one win can change that tune and then a second win and then a third win. And so, you know, even though it wasn't quite to the level of the expectations that fans might have had, I still think fans are somewhat realistic with, okay, we dealt with injuries. Even though Cal kind of self-imposed a shorter roster and that hurt him, you know, the turnaround was still sufficient. and we're going to take this first season as a win, considering, you know, Arkansas didn't make the NCAA tournament last year, and Cal is now just the second coach in program history to take the team to an NCAA tournament in his first season as head coach. So I think all in all, it comes away with a net positive, even though it's a smaller margin than most expected.
So, Jackson, you got a chance to see this KU team earlier in the season, albeit a different team in an exhibition game. What's something that KU does that worries you heading into this matchup? What's something that you feel confident that Arkansas is going to be able to do that could help them pull off the slight upset?
So I think one thing that Kansas does really well is play through Hunter Dickinson. And in addition to that, they rebound really well. Hunter Dickinson's one of the best big men in college basketball, and he has been for a few years now. There's a reason that he was so sought after when he transferred from Michigan, and he's been the focal point of a lot of social media scrutiny and praise ever since he got to Kansas. It's because he's a very good basketball player. You know, and he's having another great year for Kansas this year. Arkansas has not had a great interior presence all season. I will say Jonas Adu has stepped up of late the past few weeks once he finally got 100% healthy from his foot surgery. But I still think that is a matchup that will give Arkansas some issues. And outside of just Hunter Dickinson, I think the entire front court from Kansas is more talented and has more size and are better rebounders than Arkansas's front court. So I think that's a big, you know, advantage towards Kansas in this game. If Kansas can crash the offensive glass and generate second chance points, I really think Kansas has a really good shot at winning this game. On the flip side of that, though, I think Arkansas has the advantage in the backcourt. And I think what Arkansas is going to try to do is what they do to most teams, is try to get downhill, finish at the rim with their gauntlet of guards. I mean, Jonell Davis is finally playing like the transfer that everybody expected him to be. DJ Wagner's really stepped up and has added a threat from the perimeter. Carter Knox has even come on and become a true three-level scorer as well. Billy Richmond is electric, and then you add Boogie Flan back to that, so you have this whole staple of guards that can get downhill and can finish at the rim, and I think that's an advantage for Arkansas, especially if they get fouled and they get to the free throw line and make their free throws.
All right, that is the Arkansas perspective from Jackson Collier, who covers them for Rivals in Arkansas. All right, Rob, before I play what Michael Swain had to say, we are going to cover the KU game first because that comes up first, and then we'll get to Missouri and Drake here coming up in a bit. Where do you feel optimistic about KU heading into this matchup? I think that Kansas is better than Arkansas. I've seen Kansas in person four separate times this year at various stages. I've seen Missouri play Arkansas twice this year, and I've probably seen Arkansas play four or five other times over the course of the season. I'm not super high on this Arkansas team. They're missing their leading scorer. Their second leading scorer is coming back from injury, and I just don't really think that all the pieces really connect that well. But you do have a guard who took a team to a Final Four a couple of years ago. You do got some kids that were highly recruited coming out of high school. There's certainly talent on this Arkansas team that makes it a coin flip. Where do you feel confident about KU coming up today?
I feel like it's exactly what Jackson Collier mentioned as weaknesses. I think Kansas' advantage is in the post. Hunter Dickinson is an All-American type player. Hunter Dickinson got paid a big NIL bag to come to Kansas to play in games like this. Now, I don't think he expected it to be a 7-10 game, but he came to Kansas to play in games like this against the best coaches and Power 5 teams and guys that are 7-foot that he should go out and dominate. Hunter Dickinson is where I feel the most confident in this game, and KU's ability to rebound is where I am confident. Despite having Big Z, he doesn't really rebound the basketball all that well for Arkansas, which is weird, but he's 7-footer, but they are a poor rebounding team. You have Hunter Dickinson, Flory Badunga, KJ Adams has been better at rebounding the ball of late. I think KU has an advantage inside, and we both know Bill Self wants to play inside out. If they can start taking control of the game in the paint, I think that gives them shooter opportunities. That's where I am the most confident. Confident in the Jayhawks.
So we asked Michael Swain that same question. Where does he think the KU has the advantage in their matchup coming up later tonight?
I think generally there are some positive aspects of this matchup for KU. You know, you look at teams that KU, I think, has really struggled with. As of late, it's kind of the high-octane offenses, right, that shoot a lot of threes and that do a really good job of creating those looks. Arkansas is not that team. You know, they're very similarly profiled to KU in terms of the way they rely on the three-point line. I would say the difference with Arkansas is that they do such a fantastic job of getting the free-throw line, whereas KU doesn't do that. But both teams are really built around scoring inside the arc, and I think for KU, the types of games that I think the Jayhawks can have success in are these games where they can kind of go shot for shot, two-pointer for two-pointer, rather than having to try and make up for a barrage of threes the other team can have. So from that side of it, I think it is a good matchup. Now, I will say athletic guards is something that KU just has generally struggled with this year. I think you can look at a game like Arizona in the Big 12 tournament. You can look what UCF did with their athletic guards to KU. That, for me, is a big concern going into this game, because if all of a sudden you're looking at the under 12 timeout, and KU's kind of gone cold offensively, and all of a sudden Hunter Dickinson picks up a second foul because KU can't guard and keep the Arkansas perimeter players in front of them, that's a tough spot for KU to be in. So I think some aspects of this matchup are favorable for KU, and I think there are also some other parts that are going to give you some concerns, but I think that's going to be the case with any sort of 7-10, 8-9, you know, any sort of game like this where it's a good team you're playing. This isn't a 16 seed or a 15 seed where there's going to be such a huge talent advantage that it doesn't really matter what the other team does well. When you're in a game like this, the other team's going to have stuff they do well. I think for KU tonight, it's going to be about how do they guard on the perimeter.
You're mentioning the perimeter. What really stands out to me is just the size matchup down low. You got Hunter Dickinson, who is a third-team All-American. You got Big Z for Arkansas, a talented seven-footer. I think that is what's going to define this matchup. If KU gets the Hunter Dickinson that has 22-11, I think they win this game. If Arkansas can figure out a way to neutralize Hunter Dickinson and KJ Adam with their own size, then I think that's a game that Arkansas can win. I think down low is where this game is going to be won or lost.
Well, yeah, and for KU especially, right, because of, I mean, Hunter's played at such a high level as of late, and KU really has played through him. The front court matchup here is really interesting because, you know, obviously Brazil for Arkansas is on a heater as of late, shooting the ball from three. But, you know, you think about KU and, you know, they play two bigs with KJ and Hunter, and the matchup that I think this game provides KU is a little bit more favorable in the front court. And I think, you know, with Hunter, KU's just got to do a good job of feeding him. And I think when you look at what Hunter has done, he has been getting more low post touches. It's not been the mid block to the elbow where he's getting the ball. He's getting it low and in really good starting positions. And so I think for KU, right, playing through Hunter is going to be the number one priority, because then you got to make Arkansas try and stop that. And when that happens, maybe they're having to send a Brazil or an Adu to double, right, if Arkansas is playing with the two bigs. And then Hunter can use his passing ability, and that's been something that I think as of late he's done a really good job of, is when teams are double-teaming him, he's been able to find his teammate.
Right now we're talking to Michael Swain, who covers the Kansas Jayhawks, getting you ready for tonight's matchup between the Jayhawks and the Razorbacks. Michael, let's talk about this. What's the relationship like between these two coaches? This is the 14th time that these two guys have gone up against one another, and we've seen different iterations. We've seen these two go against each other in the national championship when John Calipari was in Memphis. They did the exact same thing when he was at Kentucky. Now we are at round three, where these two guys are at Kansas and Arkansas, respectively. How have you seen this relationship grow over the years?
Well, I think it's something where I think with age comes understanding. And I think early on, right, I think I'm not breaking any news here, that I think, you know, these two coaches had a good rivalry, right? You know, Kentucky and Kansas for a long time were two of the biggest schools on the recruiting trail and were fighting for similar kids. And I think the coaches took very different approaches to building rosters. But I think you see this really across the sport with some of the older coaches now, where I don't know if rivalry is the right word, but I think some of those relationships that maybe they previously had, you know, I think they soften a little bit as time goes on, as people are around more. And so I think just being around the two coaches, you can sense, right, they've got a tremendous amount of respect, but I think they also, you know, over time probably can enjoy the time around each other maybe a little bit more than they would have, you know,
Mike, I think that KU's winning this game. I've seen KU in person 4 times this year. I've obviously watched them a lot on television. I've watched Arkansas a handful of times against Missouri in the SEC. I watched a lot of SEC basketball this year. I think that Kansas has a better coach than Arkansas. I think they have more talent than Arkansas. I think the injuries right now to the Razorbacks, I think that is going to be the difference. I like KU to win this game. This feels like an 81-72 Jayhawk win in my mind.
Yeah, I do have KU winning. I think that in terms of the style, right, if KU is able to get this thing to be a slower game like I think they would like, I think that bodes really well because of the way that Hunter's playing right now. And with Arkansas, they can just be erratic offensively. And I think this is the type of game where if KU can protect the paint like they've done for so much of this year, if all of a sudden, you know, Wagner and Davis and even if Boogie Flan is able to come out and play 15 minutes, if those guys are settling for two-point jumpers, or they're settling for threes, like, man, I think KU will live with that. So I think KU is going to have the game plan. Bill Self has been incredible in his career in the first game of a weekend. Now, granted, if you're Bill Self, right, a lot of the time you're a one seed or a two seed, so you're playing 16s and 15 seeds. But then you can look at a Sweet 16 record. The Sweet 16 record is very strong, and that gives me some encouragement that when KU gets time to prepare for an opponent that is equal, they're able to come out with a great game plan, and they tend to win. So that gives me some optimism, I think, for a game like this later tonight.
That was Michael Swain, who covers the Jayhawks for 24/7 Sports. This is what we're going to do. We're going to step aside here. That was the first game of the evening. We'll get to Missouri and Drake coming up on the other side. Plus, Rob and I will give you a couple of gambling plays that we like for later today, and we'll also go through the matchups that we have for the night session of round one, day one in the NCAA tournament. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, we got you ready for the KU game. Let's get you ready for the Missouri game. Coming up in about an hour, they will play the Drake Bulldogs. I believe the Drake is the best mid-major in the country. We had the play-by-play voice of the Drake Bulldogs on the show earlier today, and I asked him if he agrees, if he thinks that Drake is the best mid-major in the country. Here is Michael Admire.
I think if they're not the best, they're up there. And I know you've been on the Dogs since back in December, so I appreciate the attention you have given to Drake this year. The way that they play, they're so fundamentally sound. They have one of the best coaches in the country, which folks in Kansas City are well aware of what Ben McCollum can do X's and O's wise, but also, you know, creating a culture. And he's done that in, you know, less than a year on the job. It's been impressive. They play connected and, you know, 30 wins. You don't, you know, accidentally get to a 30-3 record and win the Missouri Valley Conference regular season in tournament. That's a tough conference, a really tough mid-major conference, and the Bulldogs kind of dominated it.
Right now we're talking to Michael Admire. He is the voice of the Drake Bulldogs. I feel kind of proud that I can say that I saw this player play in high school. I've been watching Bennett Sturge play basketball since he was a sophomore at Liberty. So to watch his game evolve and mature to this point where he's not just one of the best mid-major point guards in the country, he is one of the best point guards in the country, period. How have you seen his game evolve? What kind of leader has he been for the Drake Bulldogs?
Hey, your love for KC high school basketball is paying off right now, man. You got the great matchup here today between a bunch of guys from the KC Metro. And, yeah, I mean, his game last year, he was second team all-conference in the MIAA, Division II conference, that Northwest played in. And now he's an honorable mention All-American. His game has developed in so many ways throughout the year. He's kind of turned into a killer. His confidence has really grown throughout the year. No bigger stage than against Kansas State in Kansas City, that neutral site game back in December. Bennett Sturge has a great game, and then he hits the game-winning three in the final second. So he's kind of turned into a little bit of a killer. He's humble. He's quiet. His game doesn't welcome a bunch of attention until he does stuff like that. So, you know, seeing his confidence grow throughout the year has been awesome. But he's also really good in the ball screen, you know, top of the key ball screen reads and reacting. He's a hooper, and he just really is, you know, really studies the game and knows the game well.
The big thing for me in this matchup is somebody who has watched a lot of Missouri this year, and I've certainly seen enough of Drake, is going to be this is the ultimate styles make fights. Missouri wants to run up and down the floor. They are 10th in possessions. Drake is dead last in possessions. They want to play the game slow. It does feel to me the team that can dictate the fight, the team that can dictate the style of this game, is ultimately going to be the one that wins this matchup.
I mean, I can't agree more. It is two very contrasting styles. We've seen it play out a few times this year with Drake, you know, going down and playing Vanderbilt in the Charleston Classic, playing Kansas State in Kansas City. You know, I don't know how familiar folks in Kansas City are with the style that Bradley plays, but Bradley, they're one of the most efficient offensive teams in all of college basketball. They've got a ton of length. They're pretty athletic as well. They obviously don't have the SEC athleticism that Mizzou has, but, you know, games like that have been tightly contested. They've been fun matchups. You know, there might be a few times where you're watching and driven crazy by the style that Drake plays, with how they will slow it down a little bit in the half court and they really shrink the floor defensively. So it will be, you know, Coach McCollum, he has this hashtag that, you know, they use as kind of like a, you know, a culture setting hashtag, and it's impose your will. And so that has been ingrained in this Drake team's mind since the day that they, you know, started practice back in June.
Right now, we're learning a little bit more about the Drake Bulldogs with Michael Admeyer. How do you think Drake can match up potentially with the athleticism of Missouri? I am guessing that Drake hasn't played many teams that have the depth and the variety of options that Missouri has in the athleticism. How do you think the Bulldogs match up?
Honestly, not great when it comes to that. I mean, we couldn't work on them growing over the last 11 days to get prepared for this game. So, yeah, that's a scary thing. I mean, Mizzou is incredibly athletic. They are a deep team. Drake doesn't go very deep into the bench. They have two players that are 1-2 in the country in minutes played per game, Bennett Sturts, who we just talked about, and Mitch Mascheri. So they've got guys that will play a ton of minutes and are used to it. But that is something that scares you. Coach Mack, I just actually sat down with him and did our pregame interview. And a line that he used, I'll use here, is he says, we got to use Missouri's athleticism against them. I'm not entirely sure what that means. Maybe it's the aggressiveness that Missouri plays with, you know, try to use that against them. But that's the plan, and we'll see how it plays out.
This sounds very weird to say, and I'm not saying this because I think Missouri is some juggernaut team. If Ben McCollum beats Missouri today, this will be the best team he has ever beaten. He was a D2 coach. He now is the coach at a D1 school, and they have had a phenomenal season. Up to this point, his best win is against Vanderbilt. They beat two other Power 5 schools. They beat Miami, whose coach fired got quit like 2 days after they lost to Drake, and they beat K-State earlier this year. If they win this game, this will be the best team that he has beaten. I certainly think that he is capable of coaching his team to win this matchup. But there are some roster deficiencies that his team has going up against Missouri. They have a very talented player in Mark Mitchell. The tallest player on Drake is 6'7". That is a disadvantage when you are playing against a power team from a power conference like Missouri. Let me play for you the Missouri side of this and wrap this thing up. We had BK on the show earlier today, and I asked him if Missouri fans should be worried about this game.
Yeah, I think there's almost like two conversations that are seemingly happening simultaneously that should kind of be separate. Drake's good. Like, they're a legitimately good mid-major team, and it's okay to give them that respect and also acknowledge I don't think they're winning this basketball game. Like, I Mizzou is a really freaking good team, and if they play up to their capabilities, I think this is like a 10 to 15 point game, C-Dot.
that being said, I don't know if Missouri's going to play up to their capabilities. And I think that's what makes it a really compelling matchup, is what we've seen from Mizzou over the last 2 to 3 weeks. Like, is that the team that shows up, or is the team that we saw for 85% of the season the team that shows up? If Caleb Grill is hitting threes, if Mark Mitchell is playing the way that we know he's capable of, and Ant Robinson basically just stays out of foul trouble, I think Mizzou wins this game by double digits. And that's not to say that Drake is a bad basketball team. They're really good. But Missouri beats a lot of good basketball teams. They beat Florida. They beat Alabama. Those teams are better than Drake. I'm not disrespecting them. I'm just saying Mizzou's also a very good basketball team and the more talented team that's going to be on the court today.
Yeah, the thing that I think intrigues me the most about Drake is I just don't see a scenario in which Drake kind of beats themselves, where I think Missouri, we saw that in a game like when they played Georgia on the road. There was that stretch there for about 8 minutes where Missouri just punched Georgia in the head and Georgia just was unable to block. I don't think that's going to happen to Drake in this matchup. I do think Missouri's going to have to play well. You alluded to it. You're going to have to keep guys out of foul trouble. You're going to have to make shots. You're going to have to protect the ball. I don't see Drake doing a lot of things that aids in their demise.
I don't know, man. Like, I know that people have, I've seen a lot of that. The thing about Drake, though, is like, man, turn the ball over a lot, but not by number, but by like, if you look at the percentage of their possessions that end in turnovers, it's shockingly high. And so, like, you'll look at the number of turnovers that they've had this year, and it's really low. It's because they play at, like, one of the slowest paces, I think actually the slowest pace in America. But the percentage of their possessions that end in turnovers is really, really high. I think they might be able to beat themselves. And Missouri's defense tends to, like, force you into that. So I think this is an Ant Robinson game. I think this is offensively a Mark Mitchell game. I do think that Mizzou's going to be able to speed them up in a way that none of their opponents have this year because, I mean, outside of basically Vandy, they haven't really played teams at the same capability as Mizzou. So I think they're going to have to speed up a little bit. I think Mizzou is going to get out into transition, and I think this game is going to be at a tempo that Drake is a little uncomfortable playing. I'm pretty confident in this one, T-Dot. I think Mizzou does win this game by double digits.
Yeah, you sound very confident in this game. If Missouri goes on a run, per se, who's that X factor? Obviously, they need Mark Mitchell to play very well. They need Caleb Grill to hit shots. I think it's Trent Pierce. I think this is a matchup to what you just said. I don't think that Drake has played a lot of teams like Trent Pierce. We're talking about a kid who is a top 75 recruit, a guy who's 6'8", can step out and shoot it, and can also dunk on you. I don't know if they've played many of those kind of players. I think this team needs good Trent Pierce to make a run.
Yeah, Trent Pierce would be the biggest player on Drake, so that's a good one. I'm going to go Ant. I mentioned his name earlier. I think he's, given the struggles that Drake has had at times this year with their turnovers, I think Ant is the kind of guy that can force them into some errant passes. We know about his quick hand. He's got to stay out of foul trouble. If he gets into foul trouble, it's a problem for Mizzou potentially. They've got other ways they can answer that, but he's just one of those guys that can be a true X factor in this kind of a game. And we've seen it, man. When Ant Robinson is at his best, he's a guy that can completely take over a basketball game for 4, 5, 6 minute stretches at a time where he gets 3 steals, a 3, two layups in transition, and then boom, game is basically over. He puts them at bay. I think that's the kind of thing you could see in this game. So I'd go Ant Robinson. I like the Trent Pierce call, though. Has he not played very well over the last couple of weeks. It's been strange to watch.
That was our guy BK joining us on the show earlier today, getting you ready for the games that we have coming up today. We got Arkansas going up against KU. We got MU going up against Drake. KU tips off in about 30 minutes. Missouri tips off in about 40 minutes. They are in Wichita. Kansas is in Providence. Really excited for a great night of college basketball here locally. Excited to break it down with you guys tomorrow after we know who the winners are. All right, coming up on the other side, let's get to the games that we have coming up later tonight in the NCAA tournament. I'll also give you a couple of bets that I like for this evening as well. Keep it right here. It's The Drive on 96.5 The Fan.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison on your new home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan, brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Honestly, my biggest takeaway of day one of the NCAA tournament, and I know that we are halfway through day one, so I'm not here to make any grand sweeping conclusions about anything.
Duke won the ACC. They went 19-1. Clemson went 18-2 in the ACC. Dominated, ran through the league. Louisville was 9-2 on the road this year. They're one of the better road teams in the country. They were an 8 seed. They went 27-8. They were 18-2 in a major conference. They got an 8 seed and they got run off the court earlier today. Clemson also went 18-2. They went 19-3 on the road. We are talking about, if I am just reading the hard facts about who you are, you would think that you were one of the better teams in the country. Clemson was a 5 seed. They never led today against McNeese State. North Carolina went 13-7. People don't even think they should have went to the NCAA tournament. We never even argued about Wake Forest being in the tournament. Wake Forest was the 4 seed in the ACC tournament. My two questions about Duke are the same, and I feel even more strongly about them today that I'm seeing the way things are playing out. Rob, we finished 7 games of the NCAA tournament. There's only 2 ACC teams left, and neither one of them have played a game in the actual NCAA tournament. Duke has not been in a fight in a long time. They haven't. They have not played a good tournament-tested team in quite some time. Outside of Louisville, that was ranked 13th, yet got an 8 seed in the NCAA tournament, the last time that Duke played a ranked opponent was on December 4th. They ain't played nobody. They're not tournament tested. They're not battle tested. That's going to factor into this NCAA tournament. It is. Where in the SEC, you certainly have played that caliber of competition. In the Big 12, you've played that caliber of competition. Kansas would have been the second best team in the ACC this year. They would have been. I'm serious. Kansas would have been second best team. BYU would have been the second best team. K-State would have finished top 4 in the ACC. That is the gap in talent level in the ACC compared to all of these other leagues. What does Duke look like when they get in a jam, when they get into a fight, when they got to play up against that 3 seed, when they got to play up against that 4 seed? Creighton would have been the second best team in that league. That stuff matters. I feel even more strongly about that today than I did a couple of days ago when I told you guys that about Duke and where I currently sit. All right, Rob, let's do this before we get out of here, and I know we're running up against the time here. What is the game that you are most looking forward to tonight that is not Missouri or Kansas? You have Yale versus A&M. You got UCLA, Utah State. You got the Michigan-UC San Diego game. What's the game that you are most looking forward to as we are transitioning to the night games?
Michigan-San Diego. The McNeese State was a popular 12-5. There is not going to be just a singular upset in this tournament. Another high power 5 is going to lose today to a mid-major. That's just how this tournament works. It's just, that's why we love brackets. We're all guessing which one it's going to be. I think San Diego, first time dancing, they can do a really good job of getting into the paint. I think they are going to beat Michigan later today. I think that's the game I'm watching. It's the late game. It's the nightcap. It's San Diego and Michigan.
Yeah, I think that's one of the marquee games of the evening. I think that game is going to be really exciting. I am curious. We had the stat where in 4 of the last 6 years, the 13 seed has beat the 4 seed. Is Texas A&M potentially in a little bit of trouble? I mean, we've seen these kind of games before where if the smaller school has a chance to win, then the crowd starts to cheer for them and they turn against the favorite team. I also just think, and some of it is just carries over from basketball, or excuse me, from football, people don't like the SEC and don't want them to do well. And there has been so much conversation about how good the SEC is that I do think if people are given the opportunity to cheer against the SEC, they will absolutely do so. Utah State and UCLA, I don't know much about those two teams. That's actually probably the two teams in this tournament that I probably know the least about. That's a good matchup. UCLA is a 7 seed. I maybe have watched them play once, twice this year. I don't think I've seen Utah State play at all. But Utah State is a team that won 26 games this year, so that's a good basketball team. I had a lot of fun today. Hopefully you guys did as well. I'm really excited for tomorrow to break down Missouri, to break down KU, and get you ready for day 2 of the NCAA tournament. Take care of yourself. It's The Drive.